Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back. We're talking about minute 87 through 88 today. And yesterday we left off with some sails in the sky. Mm-hmm. And today we're starting with a song.
We are, yes.
From a gravelly voice that we haven't heard in a good little while.
Correct. And John, we are known subtitleists.
Yes.
And we read our movies.
I love to read my movies and TV shows.
Yeah. Subtitles really spoiled this one, didn't it? Because before we cut into the interior of this ship, we
Gurney get, Halleck.
Yeah, we get Gurney singing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, come on.
Damn. Now, I will say, when we were in the theaters watching this for the first time.
The theater?
Yeah. No, when we were in the theaters watching for the first time, to hear, you know, the majestic singing of the wonderful poet Gurney Halleck.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, baby, the ever beautiful sounds of a Balisset.
It's very good.
Oh, it's so it's great.
Wonderful. And what a good, wholesome song he's singing.
Do away with these idiots I blame.
Yep.
The still suit is full of piss. My hand is caked in sand. Save me from these utter morons. Another world, another land. If that's not a Pulitzer Prize winning poet, yeah. I don't know what is.
I was going to say that's like the hardest track in a rap beef. It's a diss track like no other. I don't know. I didn't write down all the lines, but I had to write down still suit full of piss.
The still suit is full of piss. Processing the thighs.
Yes. It's urine is processed in the thigh pads.
Yeah. Urine and feces are processed in the thigh pads.
Oh, how I wish Max von Sydow could be here to say that.
Urine and feces are processed in the thigh pads.
But yeah, we have a very, you know, gruff and, you know, rough looking Gurney.
Yeah.
You know, we talked yesterday about how time had been shown being passed through Paul's eyes, turning blue as he had spent time with the Fedaiken. Gurney had gone from the very, you know, military, you know, hard, you know, flat top cut kind of look and everything to just this super long old man hair. It's not super old. I mean, he's still got, you know, a little bit of black hair and everything in there, but he's certainly no Josh Brolin from the Goonies. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I thought this brought the whole timeline question back up because from the attack to now, I guess it has been like, what, 7 months?
I think that is probably safe to say. Like, Jessica at this point is very pregnant.
Sure.
However, she is still pregnant, so.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, God. So, Paul, we talked about this earlier in an episode this season, but like, Paul tells his mother that he recognizes that she's pregnant when he has his first moment of prescience out in the desert with the whole, you know, saving the, you know, damn the spice, save the workers whole fiasco, right?
Yeah, his quote unquote allergy attack.
Yeah. And she said, how did you know that? I barely even know that, which means that at that point, she's probably like 4 to 6 weeks along.
Yeah.
If I had to guess.
Something like that.
But it's interesting. So, okay. So if she's 4 to 6 weeks along, then that puts us within the timeline of the embryo that we saw at the start of the movie, which was that 5 to 10 week looking, you know, range.
Right.
And we know that the start of this movie was direct, like hours after the end of part one.
Right.
Right. So we have our weird, you know, fetal development jump when Jessica takes the spice.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're still probably within that 6 to 7 month window.
Okay.
So she's still like super fucking pregnant, like ready to, you know, give birth soon, but hasn't quite done that yet.
Right. Okay. Then that's some impressive hair growth for Gurney.
I have to get my hair cut like once every 4 to 6 weeks.
Really?
My hair grows fast.
Okay.
Well, yeah. So
some of us are lucky, I guess.
Well, some of us don't have a forehead that starts in the top of our fucking head.
Hey, man, at least I recognized it eventually.
All eventually, right. But I have some pictures of you with your fucking pictures with your seven head, bro.
Yeah, no, I saw some pictures of me from like a year and a half, 2 years ago before I had fully committed to shaving it off. And whoo, it was on up there, man. Oof. My hairline was making a quick retreat.
Your hairline was France, dude. Just giving up.
Oh. So,
shout out to all the French listeners. Jesus.
So, Gurney's song comes to an end here, and
he's pilot, weirdly interrupted.
Yeah, yeah. The pilot says, "We're in," like a hacker in an 80s movie. He says, "We're in." And he reaches over, starts flipping various switches, you know, adjusting technology.
Yeah. And Gurney sets down his balisette, which before we leave the balisette, to me, it just looks like they just took the neck off of a, you know, 8-string guitar.
Sure.
And just like slapped it onto something, which is fine because like it looks great. Mm-hmm. And well, I'm curious if so the way that Josh Brolin is playing looks like someone that has been playing guitar. So I don't know if Josh Brolin like is a does
play.
Okay. Yeah. Cause he's like making chord structures and everything in terms of like how he's actually holding the guitar and how he's moving his hand. It looks very natural. So,
yes. So I wanted to thank you for bringing this up. Cause I did want to give them props for this. A lot of times in TV shows or whatever, when someone's playing the guitar,
they're just open hand holding the neck or they're like,
they're just doing bullshit.
Yeah.
On the guitar neck. It doesn't match up to the music that's being played or to any known like chord shapes or anything like that.
Yeah.
This actually looks real.
I saw some church G's in there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
There's like a moment where he's playing this, this like finger pick pattern. And he, like, we see him reach down to the low strings to get one of the root notes down there.
And he's doing like the appropriate slides down and everything.
Yeah. So
like,
it actually lines up. I mean, Lord knows who, or Lord knows what the tuning and, you know, how to play this instrument is, but at least from, you know, you and I knowing how to play guitar as little or as much as we do, it looks, yeah, accurate, which is nice.
Very natural.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a lovely, lovely little piece of detail that, quite honestly, they did not have to put in there.
Nope. But you know what? It just adds to it.
Yeah.
It makes it better. Yeah, so
I agreed.
Props.
Absolutely. So I guess wherever they're flying is juicy. They say that a lot.
Juicy, juicy.
Yeah, don't love it, but that is a descriptor that we'll come to find out what it means later. But
it means that they're landing in a giant field of juicy fruit gum.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, good.
That's the like flavor of spice, actually. It's not cinnamon, it's that.
Oh, juicy fruit. So it's like really intense and then gone in 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Kind of like that zebra gum.
Zebra stripe gum is exactly what I was thinking of. Yep. Then we get some just banter between Gurney and the pilot here. I guess we should call him the spotter. That's what he's called in the subtitles.
Well, according to Art and Soul, he's not just a spotter. I mean, he is the pilot of the harvester. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, that makes sense. Because they definitely say spotter in the subtitles.
Yep.
I would not expect the spotter to be the person driving the harvester.
You wouldn't think so. You would think that whoever's driving the carryall is.
Right.
But, you know, maybe it's just a subtitle goof. Maybe. maybe they don't want to go into like the full detail about the layout of the cabin like I have on this copy of Art and Soul that's in my lap right here.
I was going to say, you and I both have experience working for small startups where you have to wear many, many different hats.
Yeah.
So maybe this guy's just pulling like triple duty.
What is smuggling if not entrepreneurial, you know, spirit?
That's true. That's true. They really have to, you know, their head of marketing is also their IT guy kind of thing, you know? So they have some playful banter back and forth, you know, nice knowing you. And Gurney, as he's climbing out, goes, was it? and we get Gurney putting his helmet on. It was something I missed here.
Yep.
So he's putting his helmet on, clearly getting ready to go outside.
He says, cooking time.
Oh, there's a lot of like chatter in the next couple of minutes.
Yeah,
that my eyes are just rolling, dude. It's so cheesy. It's like, it's good.
It's
exactly the kind of stuff that you would get, you know, working in any kind of like blue collar job.
Yep. I have to admit, I've never been in the blue collar workforce, but I have had a lot of family members that have been in it. And, you know, we know some people that, you know, have been in that and everything. And like hearing the stories that they have about the shit that people pull on the job, it tracks.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. So it's funny. I mean, I was like, ugh, okay. It just reminds me of, you know, growing up on the out in Paulding County when talking to all the farmers out there, you know.
Yeah.
it's what it was. So Gurney makes his way outside of the harvester, and the spotter gives them the all clear. And then he just jumps off the end of the harvester.
He kind of just like hops off of it.
Yeah.
And we see him like smack his hip. Mm-hmm. And we hear the same sound that Duncan had when he like activated his, you know, suspensor field. And Gurney just like kind of slowly descends. And there's such a fucking cool shot of Gurney descending by himself, separated from the harvester. And they're both just like slowly descending. Mm-hmm. And then Gurney touches down first before, you know, the harvester. And as the harvester is descending, in my notes I have, we hear the creak of its old rusty bones.
Yeah.
Which I think is the perfect way to describe, like, all the sounds of it. Like, you know, as it's falling and then when it hits the ground with the loud thud that shakes the earth and everything, there's still, like, some background, like, like metal warping noises and everything. So,
well, they are not expected to have the newest and greatest technology in the smuggling field.
This harvester looks like it's seen some better days for sure.
Yeah.
It's like, it is very notably not a harvester like the Atreides one though, that we saw earlier. This one's very different.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have it, you know, we don't have, at least for this minute, much more to see, because the minute ends with Gurney reaching down and scooping up a handful of sand.
Yeah. Yeah. So it ends right mid kneel.
Yeah.
I was going to say the part of our pre-flight inspection is just making sure that there's no weird sounds that happen when the plane gets like shook.
Sure.
So you go to one side of the wing, and we're flying Cessna 172s.
Yep.
And you just like grab the wing and just like push up and down on it to kind of rock the plane back and forth and listen to see if there's anything, like any sounds.
Yeah. I mean, as stupid as it sounds.
No, it's good.
Yeah. It's probably a really easy way to determine, hey, something doesn't feel right.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the planes that I'm flying are like, you know, 30 something years old or more.
Yeah.
One of the ones that's at the school is from the 70s. So it is, they're very creaks. It's normal to hear just creaks like that. I find it to be so funny that I'm just over here like shaking a plane back and forth.
It reminds me a lot. So I grew up, my dad and his parents are all like big boat people, right? So like I grew up around, you know, my dad's boat, which wasn't anything like super fancy. You know, we didn't have money growing up, but it was a boat that he bought used from someone that was just old, and it had its own creaks and noises.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
If you've ever, you know, had to, you know, put a boat up on a trailer, the noises that it makes as you're like cranking the winch to like really secure it and tighten it down, those are definitely those kind of noises that you have. But my grandparents had a sailboat, and like we would go to the sailboat and, you know, go out and spend the night out on the water, which was terrifying if you've never actually done that.
Sounds fun.
It's fun, but when you're out there and it's just like the stillness of nothing, it's pretty fucking scary.
sure.
But yeah, there's still like the creaks and stuff of the boat as it's rocking through the night and all that stuff.
I find it to be oddly comforting.
It is, but also still terrifying.
Yeah, sure.
I wouldn't want to, you know, do it for months on end and, you know, be on a sailboat in the middle of the ocean away from shore.
Yeah, like that guy who in the past couple of months sailed from, I think it was like Portland or something, to Hawaii with just him and his cat.
Oh, fuck that.
It was just him and his cat on the sailboat, dude.
No, fuck that shit.
He made it, though.
Yeah.
All right, cool. We're clearly stalling again.
Well, before we go, I have some art and soul notes.
Oh, nice. Yeah. We're here. We made it.
We are here. We have made it. And I want to talk about this smuggler's cockpit.
Okay.
So the cockpit and everything was all practical, just like, you know, we had with the Orny Bee and everything. But unlike the Orny Bee, which was filmed in Budapest, all of the shots from the cockpit were actually done out in the deserts in Abu Dhabi. The cockpit itself was built by Classic Mechanics in Budapest. And in order to get it down to Abu Dhabi, what they had to do was they had to ship it in a broken down state, but in climate controlled shipping containers. And the reason why they wanted to do that was because there were a lot of plastics and everything, like the giant rounded, you know, shield top that Gurney like opens up to leave through the top of the cabin,
the porthole hatch,
that's the word. Yep. That's a giant plastic bulb, right? Okay. So like they wanted to make sure that stayed intact and wasn't warped by the heat.
Fair
of
enough.
Travel.
Yep.
Because the legs that we saw earlier in the movie in, you know, the late 30s episodes for the harvester, the Harkonnen harvester, were damaged in the middle of shipping.
Okay.
Thankfully, they're giant metal legs, so, you know, the damage wasn't as obvious or severe.
Sure.
Since all the shots were done in Abu Dhabi, what they had to do was they had to take essentially this refitted, you know, box truck, which is what they originally like sculpted the whole cockpit and everything out of, and put it up on the edge of a really tall dune. So that way when they were filming and you could see through the top and you could see through the window that the pilot was sitting at, that's all like practical dunes. It's not in front of a green screen or anything that.
Okay.
So yeah, a lot of really cool work went into, you know, like the staging and the planning and the construction of this cockpit.
It looks great.
And where they filmed it, the crew dubbed Cockpit Hill.
Classic.
Yeah.
How original.
Yeah. Them.
Well, cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, as we've said with just about every one of the instances where they have opted to do practical effects versus special effects and like CG, it pays off because this looks cool as hell.
Yeah, it's so awesome. The crew referred to the cockpit itself as the NASA truck because it was almost space worthy.
Fair enough. Okay. All right, cool. Well, what do you say we get back tomorrow and talk a little bit more about what's going on outside the harvester?
Yeah, there's a we're going to have a little bit of action tomorrow, I think.
I think we will.
So, as always, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com. You can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us that way. We'll be back tomorrow with a Thursday episode to help begin to round your week out.
All right, cool. We'll see you then.
See ya.